stories carry with them great power.
They can transport us into the light and into the dark.
And into a place in between, a land of shadows.
It is in this land where the macabre and the strange reign.
With tales of terror,
tales of hope,
tales of the whimsical,
and the weird.
These are stories told in the shadows.
And we are the shadow storytellers. It's that most wonderful time of the year, and for us, the final episode of Season 2. We want to wish you the happiest of holidays and thank you so much for joining us in the shadows this year, with one final, fun, frightful, festive tale that we hope you will enjoy. If you get the chance, please take a moment to visit us at theshadowstorytellers.com, check out our store, and consider putting a little something in our virtual tip jar. We're a very small indie production, and we don't receive any revenue from the built-in subscriptions or advertising on any podcast streaming platform, so we really do appreciate any support. Now, as for this week's tale. The holidays are hard on all of us, with many stresses beyond our control that keep these special days from being quite as magical as the old stories and cinematic classics would want us to believe. However, what if those things that seem beyond our control actually weren't? Would we allow these demons to act as they always have, because that is what we've become accustomed to? Or would the spirit of the season allow us to finally exorcise them? A most unfortunate couple will be confronted by this very question in a tale we call Carol of the Gifts.
When Adele came home on December 23rd and kicked off her work shoes for the last time before the holiday, Jake was waiting for her and doing nothing else. He was sitting on the couch in his house clothes, but the TV was off and there was no book beside him. He looked up at her with a nervous flicker of a smile and then looked away, trying to appear nonchalant, which would have been a lot easier if he'd had a book handy. "You did it, didn't you?" Adele asked. Jake kept his face turned away, probably buying time to arrange it into a neutral expression, but he had no experience lying to her, and soon seemed to decide that it wasn't worth acquiring any now. "Yeah, I totally did," he said, grinning with guilt. "I couldn't help it. It was this perfect storm of inspiration and opportunity. Don't feel like you have to. I won't be hurt. I'm the one who broke the agreement, not..." "I did it too," Adele admitted, sinking down next to him on the couch without removing her work shirt. "Couldn't help it." Jake put an arm around her, and Adele turned and squeezed him, clinging to this high point, preparing for the drop that always followed. "Hey," Jake said, rubbing her back. "I'm thinking there's no reason we have to do it exactly on the day." "You want to get it over with?" asked Adele. "I wasn't going to put it quite like that," said Jake, "but yeah. We do it right now, and however it goes, we'll have time to deal with it and then just enjoy Christmas. No matter what." Adele nodded resolutely. "Okay then." She started to get up, but Jake tugged her back into her seat. "Me first." Adele closed her eyes as Jake placed a small, rectangular, paper-wrapped object in her hands, but the moment she felt its shape, she knew exactly what it was. In retrospect, she'd really left herself open for this. With a bracing sigh, she tore the paper away from the cover art of Remnants 3, the new installment in her favorite video game series. The second one had ended on a nearly unbearable cliffhanger. "I thought it wasn't going to be out until February," Adele said, sniffing back the first hint of tears that quickly threatened to overtake the discrete capacity of her sinus passages. "Limited pre-release," Jake explained. "Conventions only." Adele didn't want to know, but couldn't bear the suspense. "What did you have to trade for it?" "Just money, I swear," said Jake. "Just money?" she asked skeptically. "What money? How?" "It's okay," he assured her. "I'm taking Kevin's night shifts all next week while his kids are in town. We'll be able to cover everything. Besides, I figure that'll give you time to play through it in peace before you have to put up with my fumbling around. But I promise, if you want to show me, I will pay attention this time." Adele leaned forward, hugging the game case to her chest, overwhelmed as ever by his thoughtfulness and trying to be nothing else. She could almost feel his eyes wandering to the TV hutch, before he reached out and pulled open the cabinet to find the empty space where her game console had been. Oh man, I kinda walked into that, didn't I? Jake smothered his disappointment almost completely under a laugh. Okay, go on. What did you sell it for? Adele held on to the answer for a few moments. Shoes, she answered. Shoes, he repeated, politely perplexed. Nice ones, she said. My side of the closet. Jake stepped out of the room and returned with the shoebox, with a bright candy cane-colored bow on top. At her nod, he opened it and pulled out what looked like a brightly polished pair of dress shoes. They're for ballroom dancing, Adele explained. The professional, almost indestructible kind with the extra padding. You said you wanted to learn. Jake squeezed the shoes tighter, face brightening, guardedly as he followed the train of her thought. That's all? He asked, not disappointed, only hopeful that there might be no catch. Nothing he had already destroyed before ever knowing about it. That's all? She lied. So now you'll be ready when we start practicing... sometime. That's so sweet, said Jake, admiring the flexible soles. Thank you. You're welcome. I'm sorry about the console, he said, tucking the shoes under his arm to touch her face. We'll figure something out. Not this week, but... I'm sorry, Adele stopped him, setting the game down on the coffee table and slipping past him toward the bedroom. I'm just sorry. She closed the door behind her to give herself a few moments to cry properly. To hurry the process along, she grabbed the card she'd hidden in her desk with the non-refundable voucher inside for the ballroom dance crash course she'd reserved for them. In the evenings of next week, of course. Every, she muttered as she tore it into pieces, damn Christmas. Soon, much too soon for Adele to pull herself together, Jake's voice arrived at the door. Can I come in, darling? Please? Adele scrambled to clear the bed and floor of voucher scraps. You can't spare me, said Jake. It's pretty clear it happened again. Adele dropped the scraps where she stood. Okay, she croaked. Hey, said Jake, stepping into the room. Come on, it's us. We know this drill. Adele snorted. You could say that. And we know how to handle it, said Jake. We pull together, not apart. He knelt halfway down to gather a handful of the torn paper fragments. Whatever this was, I'm sure it was perfect because the things you think of always are. But it doesn't matter because no thing ever could matter compared with being loved the way you love me. It wasn't even really a thing, Adele murmured. Aren't you glad we started early? Jake forced a brittle laugh. Now we're not ending the holiday on this note. Think of how much time we still have together. It was time together, said Adele. When Jake started trying to assemble the scraps in his hand, as if seeing their original form would give him the power to make everything right, Adele shook her head. Never mind, she told him. I do love you so much. I love you too, Jake replied emphatically. Adele tried to smile and to leave it at that, but she had never been terribly good at lying to Jake either. I know, Adele shouted. I know and you know. We don't need any more proof. It had been easy to brush away the disappointment that first Christmas, when every facet of their marriage had been bright and novel and almost too mesmerizing to be real, and their gift-giving mishap had seemed like nothing more than a mischievous quirk of fate. 15 years on, laboring under this increasingly undeniable curse, every Christmas was harder than the one before it. Adele tried to breathe, but no matter how many little sips of air she forced in and out of her chest, nothing loosened, no relaxation came. Just once, she gasped. I want to see a chance to make you happy, and take it, without worrying that I'm walking into a trap. I want to put the box in your hands and watch you open it and see an honest, untainted smile light up your face. Just light it all the way up without this shadow hanging over us. And I want to smile that way for you. God knows you've earned it, over and over again. Jake shrugged helplessly, as if his arms were searching for some purpose. Then he wrapped them tentatively around her. Adele gripped the back of his jacket as the bitter aching poured out of her. I want to give you more than a thought wrapped in brightly colored trash, she cried. My love for you is rapture stuffed into an endurance-shaped bottle. My love for you is born to be a worldwide holiday, a month-long bacchanal of unadulterated joy, with dancing and parade floats and giant fucking fireworks. Not this somber, consoling, sacrificial vigil. And I can't keep pretending there's no difference between the two. Adele let her gasping turn wordless again, though it didn't stop. I feel the same way, Jake confessed. You do? She asked. Of course. It was crushing, and a relief, to hear her eternally optimistic husband take his share of the sobs that had been so long coming. They gripped each other for several minutes, waiting for the numbness of exhaustion to set in. It doesn't really have to be a worldwide holiday, Adele sniffled, finally. I know, said Jake. I just really, really wanted to give you your present. Adele lifted her head from Jake's shoulder in mid-sentence, to watch the confetti of the torn-up voucher drift past her in the still, indoor air. How? She muttered aloud. How what? Jake asked. Adele turned around in his arms to look at the fistful of paper he had been clutching to her back. As they both watched, shreds of paper escaped from between Jake's tired, inattentive fingers, floated halfway across the bedroom as if in a gusty wind, and then vanished into a cloudy splotch of air, almost imperceptibly thicker than the background. What is that? Adele breathed. When Jake reflexively tightened his fist around the scraps left in his hand, they stopped wriggling. Those already in the air hurried twice as quickly into the splotch, which then dissipated into the same color and texture as the rest of the room. With no need to voice their shared thought, as bizarre as it was, Adele and Jake both dashed back into the living room, to the couch where they had first exchanged the packages. It was here, Adele said, touching the corner of the table where she was almost certain she'd set Remnants 3. It was right here, wasn't it? Do you remember? I think so, said Jake. I'm sorry, I can't be completely sure. Nor can I, said Adele. For that matter, do you remember what happened to any of our Christmas presents to each other? Jake looked off to the side for several seconds, searching his memory. I'm not sure. I've never wanted to dwell on them. They made me too sad, but let's see. The first year, there were the combs. Aren't those still in your jewelry box? No, Adele admitted. They went missing the first night. I didn't know how to tell you after what you gave up to get them. I just counted myself lucky that you wouldn't expect to see them for a while. But the second year... The second year I gave you those tulip bulbs for the planter, which you gave up to appease the landlord into switching me to a safer parking space, right? But I downgraded my car to an old van that didn't fit, and the day after you told the landlord, the spot was gone completely for that laundry room overflow expansion. And what about the bulbs? Jake thought and shrugged. I guess I assumed you took them to your mother like we discussed. I never did, said Adele. In spite of the empty space where Remnants 3 should have been, she was suddenly feeling more hopeful than she had at Christmas for a long time now. They had both seen that paper-sucking little cloud, if only barely. Finally, they had confirmation of the reality, the substance, of this curse, beyond the astronomical series of coincidences unfailingly following its pattern. If this thing had form, and desires, like their ruined gifts, perhaps it had fears and weaknesses, too. I did it again, Adele announced after breakfast on the morning of Christmas Eve. If I brought down another round of it on us, it's my fault. She pushed the same shoebox that had held Jake's dancing shoes into his hand. With one raised eyebrow, Jake removed the lid and picked up the book inside. "Spiritual Cleansing for Beginners?" he read the title aloud. "Okay, technically it's not a gift," said Adele. "I borrowed it from the library yesterday, but I also didn't have to give anything up to get it, so I'm hoping we're in the clear." Jake leafed warily through the pages. "Protection charms for private spaces. Curse removal." "That's for curses cast by living practitioners," Adele said, "which I'm starting to think is less likely. I've been reading ahead," she explained. "I think the most relevant part for us is going to be..." She turned a few more pages for him. "Expulsion of disruptive spirits?" Jake read. "You think we're haunted?" "We're not going to go over establishing the involvement of preternatural forces, are we?" Adele asked. "You saw what I saw." "Of course not," Jake assured her, with his eyes on the text. I'm just catching up here, okay?" "You think this'll work? We're not just going to piss off whatever it is further?" "Well, from my position of, like, 3 hours more study on the subject than you, I can't make any promises, but yeah, I think it's worth a shot. I'm ready to take a risk to make this thing move." Jake nodded, still reading. "Okay, so, candles, salt, sage, myrrh? Yeah, let's get it set up." "By the power of the eternal life force that dwells now in us, we call upon the mischief-doer who has wronged us to answer for these actions." Adele and Jake squeezed each other's hands inside of their little circle of salt and candle flames on the floor of their bedroom. "We call..." With a cold downdraft, the cloud appeared between them in the center of the circle within a circle formed by their arms. More visible than last time, it grew denser and more defined until it formed a scale model of an elderly man in pajamas. "What do you want?" the old man snapped. Jake briefly let go of Adele's hand to run his finger down the propped open page of the book next to him. "When confronting a belligerent spirit of a deceased human being, the need for hostility can often be minimized or avoided by assisting the spirit with the root cause of its restlessness," Adele reread along with him, sideways. "What do you want?" Jake returned. The apparition scoffed. "What could you and your loving wife possibly understand about wanting? Your greed is beyond believing. You have what nearly every spirit, living or dead, needs most desperately, but not one in a dozen receives, and still you want more. I'll show you want." With an even colder gust, Adele and Jake's cozy, stuffy apartment disappeared around them, replaced by a snowy graveyard. "This was my funeral," said the apparition. Adele and Jake, finding themselves standing on the surface of the snow, turned a circle, searching for the event. Even a lone priest with maybe one conflicted relative. There was nothing but moonlight. "Are you sure you got the right time?" Jake asked tentatively.
"The moment of my physical interment is unimportant," said the apparition. "It was conducted by paid strangers, dispassionately and without ceremony. This was the farewell I received."
Adele and Jake waited, listening to the silence and the wind, until it seemed this would be all they had been brought to witness. Then the woman arrived, stumbling and weaving through the graves, with a half-finished wine bottle in one hand and a bulging, discolored canvas sack in the other. When she reached the foot of the grave, she let go of the bag and sat down heavily in the snow, sobbing and swaying as she took another long draught from the bottle. "You didn't bring him back, you know," she slurred viciously at the headstone. "Not with your condolences, or your gifts, or your dying." She finished off the last of the wine. "You could have," she sobbed, "if you'd just tried a little sooner, if you hadn't left all your good intentions for the very last moment." She lunged forward at the headstone. "You could have saved him," she shouted, swinging the empty wine bottle at it. The glass broke on the first hit, but she kept swinging, jabbing, scraping, managing to leave a few thin, shallow scratches across the surface of the stone. When she had broken the glass into pieces too small to keep holding, she dragged the bag closer and pulled out a foot-long spade. With the same frenzied vigor she attacked the headstone with, she shoveled aside the snow, and then the dead roots of grass, and then the frozen earth. The oozing glass cuts on her hands didn't seem to slow her down at all as she dug a rounded hollow perhaps 3 feet deep. Once satisfied with its dimensions, she upended the bag into it. An entire plucked turkey slid out, slick with rot and peppered with maggots. "You can have it back," she cried, shoveling the displaced dirt back on top.
"When the spring thaw came and the bird began to rot," said the apparition, "it bubbled up and caused such a stench that the caretakers thought something had gone wrong with my burial."
The snow and the woman with the spade faded away, replaced by a swampy hole in a lawn and a team of men with far more efficient shovels.
"They ripped me out of the ground before they found enough loose bones to piece together what had happened. Then they tossed me back in with even less ceremony than before."
The team vanished into another snowy winter. The untended headstone was partially askew post-exhumation.
"Okay, so you need a proper send-off?" Jake guessed. "We can do that, right?"
He looked to Adele, who nodded and went to stand at one side of the grave. Jake stood across from her. The apparition sat on top of his grave and crossed his arms, clearly without great expectations.
We're gathered here today, Adele started, to lay to rest.
She looked to the dirt-crusted headstone and then to the apparition. Neither of them offered help.
"A human being," Jake suggested.
"Yes," Adele agreed. "A human being with feelings. A human being who was once a baby, crying in the night as his first teeth broke through his gums."
"A human being who heard music," Jake played the odds,
"and felt his body try to move with it."
"A human being who's been hot and cold," said Adele. "Hungry and full and happy and sad and angry and scared and excited."
"And lonely," Jake added.
"Lonely most of all.
So lonely that one lifetime was not enough to feel it all."
"With respect and sympathy," said Adele, "we commend his spirit to the hereafter."
"May he rest in peace," Jake concluded. They both looked to the apparition. His arms were still crossed, but his shoulders had softened somewhat.
"I suppose you're both awfully proud of your brevity," he said.
Adele and Jake had both worked enough customer service jobs to know, without having to confer with each other, that the apparition would have shared the rest of his complaints, if he'd been able to come up with any. With a half-hearted sigh, the apparition waved the cemetery away.
"This was my last Christmas among family," the apparition explained, as the air warmed by 40 degrees
and the smell of sage grew stronger than it had been in Jake and Adele's apartment, joined by rosemary, cinnamon, and a full feast of subtler fragrances. After a few moments of cloudy light, an adjoined dining room and parlor came into view, glowing with warmth and decorated from floorboards to rafters with pine and ribbons and lights. The dining room was full, with more chairs pushed in around the table than it could really accommodate. The guests were all speaking animatedly over each other, laughing, praising the magnificent dishes on the table. A single overflow place setting had been added to a low table in the parlor. The low table looked as if it had been dragged a little closer to the dining room than its usual position, almost, but not quite close enough to allow natural conversation across the rooms. The apparition took his lonely place on the sofa and picked at the plate, unable to summon much interest in anything other than the snifter of brandy that accompanied it.
"Okay, isolated in a crowd, this is a standard," said Adele, taking in the situation.
"Pfft," huffed the apparition. "You haven't felt isolated for 15 years. Perhaps never in your whole charmed life."
"You don't know anything about our lives before we met, do you?" Jake asked, not unkindly.
"Look, the solution to this one isn't easy, but it's simple. We have to make this into the cool table to be at, so that one becomes the outside."
He sat down on the sofa next to the apparition, and Adele moved a straight-backed chair so she could sit across from them.
"The cool table?" the apparition repeated,
the words unnatural in his wizened voice.
That's right, said Jake. And the quick and dirty way to achieve that is with secrets.
Have I not already exposed myself enough for the two of you?
They don't have to be substantial secrets, said Jake. It can be what I'm thinking of right now. 20 questions. Go.
A game? The apparition asked disdainfully.
Oh, so you know how to play it then, Adele noted. And you wanted to be included in something, added Jake. Once you get a few questions in while the others aren't paying attention, they'll never catch up.
The apparition sighed and relented.
Animal?
No,
Jake answered triumphantly.
Vegetable?
Asked the apparition.
No.
Mineral?
Yes.
The apparition slowed to think.
Is it rare?
He asked.
Yes, said Jake.
Gold?
The apparition guessed prematurely.
No, said Jake.
Is there more than one of it? Adele offered a little careful assistance. She and Jake had played this game enough times that she could have blazed through it systematically to zero in on the answer in a matter of a few minutes, but that wasn't really the point of the exercise.
No, Jake answered.
The apparition tapped on his chin, perplexed but engaged.
Is it a famous diamond, one with a name?
He asked.
No, said Jake.
Does it have a practical use?
He asked. For the first time, Jake paused.
Sometimes, I think, he said.
Is it natural? Adele asked.
Yes, said Jake.
Could I visit it? The apparition asked.
Not easily, answered Jake.
Is it romantic? Adele asked, starting to get a suspicion.
Definitely, said Jake.
The apparition furrowed his brow, looking lost.
Is it a diamond? A man from the main table asked, twisting in his seat and hanging his arm over the back of it. He didn't seem surprised to see Adele or Jake there.
We already ruled that out, said the apparition.
He couldn't disguise the satisfaction that already knowing this pointless fact brought him.
A cathedral?
Asked the woman in the next seat over at the table.
It's something natural,
said the apparition, tapping his chin as he searched for a better qualified guess.
If we walked outside right now, could we see it? Adele gambled.
Yes, exclaimed Jake. It took a matter of seconds for those listening to arrive at the logical next guess. With the advantage of having been paying attention the whole time, the apparition got there first.
The moon!
Yes,
Jake pointed to the apparition and tipped an imaginary hat to him. The nearer half of the main table groaned approvingly and clamored for the next round, in which they were certain to do better. The parlor dissolved before their wishes were granted. Adele and Jake found themselves occupying two antique wooden desks in an office otherwise empty, except for the apparition and one other man.
This is what I spent my life building, the apparition whispered to Adele and Jake. And the appreciation I got for it.
The other man in the office cleared his throat, preparing to speak.
Yes, yes, what is it? The apparition snapped at him.
Sir, the man started, about it being Christmas tomorrow.
Yes, you've brought that fact to my attention incessantly, the apparition acknowledged.
Twice, sir, the man corrected timidly. You said you'd give it some thought.
To the news that your loyalty extends to Christmas Eve and no further? The apparition interrupted. Believe me, I've given it plenty of thought.
Sir, please.
The man looked at the floor, preparing to say something too embarrassing to be accompanied by eye contact.
This may be the last...
The last Christmas day you'll have to spend with your son, the apparition finished. Yes, I remember you saying something about that last year. Tell me, how many hours are you planning to have your dying child rob me of before he finally gets on with it?
Oh, wait. You're an actual shithead, aren't you?
Jake was the first to cut in.
Excuse me?
squawked the apparition, looking away from his employee. He is, Adele agreed. He's not a restless spirit confused by the suddenness of his transition. He's just a greedy, thieving killjoy who happens to be dead.
Oh, okay, so what do we do? Jake asked.
Take him back to our time, said Adele.
How?
Well, we're alive and we outnumber him. We have the power. Just focus it. Adele and Jake returned to gripping each other's hands, closed their eyes, and with a shared singularity of vision, resummoned the warmth of their apartment around them. Once the reality of the floor beneath them felt solid, both of them reached for the book. Adele grabbed it first and flipped ahead to the right page. The apparition squirmed in the center of the circle between them, occasionally darting himself startlingly toward one of their faces, unable to make contact.
How dare you!
It shouted, its voice smaller in the circle than it had been in the memories of its own construction. Jake read from the page aloud. When an entity, whether human in origin or otherwise, proves consciously and willfully malevolent, the best course of action is forceful banishment. Although unpleasant, forceful banishment has an extremely high success rate when righteously indicated. Often, the effects can ripple backward, reducing the harm the entity has caused in the past. Near the salt and sage for your ritual, place an item symbolic of the energy you wish to use to replace the malevolent presence. He looked up at Adele.
What do we have left? He asked. There must be something.
The shoes? Adele suggested.
They weren't completely ruined. We could count them a symbol of our luck turning around.
Jake mimed cutting himself an exit valve through the circle, as the book had instructed, if the need to leave during spirit containment arose. He stepped into the living room, but quickly returned.
They're gone now, too, he told Adele.
Adele cursed and swatted at the apparition, who was now gloatingly dancing on thin air in Jake's gift. Jake frantically scanned the room.
You don't deserve nice things, the apparition crowed. You have love!
They certainly did have love, in great abundance. The room, the apartment, was full of it. It might not have been enough to shield them from unhappiness, but if it wasn't the perfect tool for driving out a hateful spirit, then what on earth would be?
Jake grabbed the blanket he and Adele shared. He grabbed the cheap wooden massage tool they used to work the knots out of each other's backs. He pulled pictures off of walls and rummaged through drawers, piling the evidence into the circle. The deck of cards they had played with for 6 hours in the emergency room after a car accident. The dried boutonniere Jake had worn to their county clerk's office wedding. The too daring for work lipstick Adele sometimes wore when only Jake could see her. When Adele's lap was full of the love-infused objects, stacked high enough to brush the toes of the ranting apparition, Jake sat back down across from her. Adele set the open library book on top of a whiteboard that had held hundreds of jokes and love notes where they could both see it. By the power of the eternal life force that dwells now in us, they read together, we charge this non-corporeal wrongdoer to withdraw every scrap of its evil influence and be gone from this place forever.
Your misery is my rightful property,
the apparition objected, as the waves of the couple's words began to worry and fray his wispy edges. Be gone from this place forever, Adele and Jake chanted, gripping each other's hands.
You need this suffering and struggle and despair,
the apparition declared with a shaking, pointed finger.
You won't know what to do with yourselves without it.
Be gone from this place forever, Adele and Jake concluded without wavering. The apparition lost its shape, churning in the air like milk in a blender. With a garbled squeak of humbug, the cloud of malice condensed and began to rain out solid objects. Shoes, undamaged tickets, and Remnants 3 tumbled down to join the pile in the middle. There were tulip bulbs as fresh and alive as the day they were bought, and artisan mixes for a waffle iron Jake no longer owned, and a new mattress pad for the heirloom crib Adele had sold, in despair of ever being able to provide for its future occupant. The cloud grew smaller and fainter as the stolen fruits of Adele and Jake's efforts for each other poured out of it. Finally, with the ejection of those beautifully jeweled combs and the platinum watch chain, there was nothing left of it. Laughing and gasping at their victorious bounty, Adele and Jake went on holding each other's hands long after the ritual had concluded itself. They remained linked even as they twisted around in the overflowing pile to blow out the candles before anything could fall into the flames.
The things they had willingly traded away over the years were still gone, but all the sabotaged, orphaned gifts that had slipped away from them, all gathered together like that, had to be worth at least a few $1,000s, if nothing else. Jake pulled one hand away to pick up the platinum chain. "Told you we'd get your console back," he said. "I'm sure there'll be another dance class open when your evening's free back up," Adele added, tenderly gathering up the combs. Before she could get hung up on the time they'd lost, Jake pulled her into the tightest hug he could, with their blanket still bunched up on the floor between them. "We did it," he told her. "Next year we can start over." "Next year," Adele agreed, and then let out a breath. "In the meantime, would it be strange to call this our best Christmas ever?" Jake shook his head against her shoulder and held her tighter. "Merry Christmas, Adele." "Merry Christmas, Jake."
Carol of the Gifts was written by Fiona J. Articinelle and performed by Matt Carter. Narration was provided by Fiona J. Articinelle. This episode was edited by Matt Carter and Fiona J. Articinelle. The Shadow Storyteller's theme, written and performed by Dennis Ticinelle. The Shadow Storyteller's artwork by Kristen McQuiggan of Drop Dead Designs. Special thanks to Lisa Onzo and Greg Bowles for the use of their guest room in this recording. For more information on the Shadow Storyteller's podcast and our other fiction works, please visit our website at theshadowstorytellers.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please like and subscribe for more information on upcoming episodes. We hope you had fun, and we'll see you again soon.